Cowboy.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, good morning, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. The NBA continuing along with its playoff series. But last night, it was baseball's turn. It's kind of been waiting around, letting hockey and basketball do its thing, go through the draft. So baseball's like, how do we get in the news? Well, how you get in the news is when you have a guy pitch a no-hitter. Mike Fier is pitching a no-hitter for Oakland last night. So now he's one of, like, two players we know from the A's this year. So you shouldn't forget him. I mean, he pitched a no-hitter for the second time in his career. They beat the Cincinnati Reds 2-0. A great catch in the outfield in the sixth inning. They always have that in no-hitters, right, where the guy makes this diving catch that saves a the potential no-hitter at the time, and then becomes one of the highlights of the no-hitter in the game. So congratulations to him. But it wasn't just any old no-hitter. It was the 300th in Major League Baseball history. All the games that I've ever gone to, and I used to go to about 30 to 40 games a year in Colorado with the Rockies. And I did that for, God, I want to say 8 years. I was used to freelance for a number of entities, so I used to go to split. I used to split the home series with another guy, so I went to a lot of games. And Coors Field, only one no hitter had ever been there, and that was against the Dodgers. It was Chano Park, I think, or maybe Hideki Nomo. They pitched a no hitter. I wasn't there at the time, but I've never seen a no hitter, and I've never seen anything close. I never saw a game at Coors Field, and all the times I've been there, and I've been to hundreds of baseball games in my life, I never saw anything close to a no hitter at Coors Field, because it's just a hitter's ballpark. I never saw a no-hitter in all the years I went to Fenway as a kid, and I used to go to a couple games a year. I never saw a no-hitter. It's one of those things I want to see, because I want to be a part of something where you're just kind of building up the anticipation and building up the anticipation, knowing something awesome is going to happen. A lot of times in sports, you don't realize something is coming historic until late, that, you know, somebody's maybe hitting a scoring streak or something, and you realize, like, in the third quarter, maybe the fourth quarter, oh, this guy could score 70 points, or he could score 75 points. A no-hitter around the fifth inning, you start seeing people getting a little bit of buzz going, right? Then they get really excited in the sixth. The seventh, they start to lose it. The eighth, they really get into it, and the ninth, they're on their feet. I really want to experience that in sports, so congratulations, Mike Fier, a no-hitter last night.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio. And again, Mike Fier's no-hitter last night, in case you missed it, because it was late. It's an A's game, right? It's an A's game in Oakland. It's a late, late no-hitter, but it's the 300th. In Major League Baseball history. They're still cool. Even though you see a couple a year, they're still cool. Now, perfect games are even better, right? A perfect game is fantastic. But
there's only been like 30 of those, right?
Yeah, only a handful of those in the history of Major League Baseball. I got to look up when the last perfect game was. I got to think it was recent, but you can't pin me down on it. I can't remember, but a no-hitter. Man, that's the best.
No, I thought it was funny how you said, you know, you've been to a lot of baseball games, as have I, and you've never seen a no-hitter. I've never even seen anyone come close
to
a no-hitter. Like, I've never seen anyone carry something into the fifth inning when, you know, all the sports news out there start sending out the alerts to jinx it.
Yeah, exactly. I've never seen one. I most of my life, baseball watching has been at Coors Field, which is like where I could probably get a base hit, for crying out loud. I mean, it's one of the biggest hitters parks in Major League Baseball. So it's hard to throw a no hitter there. The humidity will kill you. I mean, the altitude will kill you. The humidor started bringing the scores down, but there was a time where it was like, I kid you not, Coors Field was like video game baseball. It was like 14-11 and it'd be the seventh inning.
That's why
I'd be looking at my watch going, I've been here 4 hours for crying out loud.
It never made sense to me. It still doesn't make sense to me to this day how Hideki Nomo threw a no-hitter there.
I don't either. It's amazing.
I don't get it.
I have been, when I used to cover the Rockies, all right, just to give you a little inside reporting. So when I covered the Rockies, I used to do it for my radio station, and I would also freelance, and I'd write game stories for, used to get printed in USA Today and a number of other publications. So I used to split that work with another guy. But one of the things that we had arranged, me and this other guy had arranged with local writers, was we would go into the visitors' locker room at the end of the game, and they would go to the home locker room, and then we would trade quotes for stories. So they would give us the Rockies quotes, and we'd give them the visitors' quotes. So I hardly ever went into the Rockies' locker room at the end of games. I always went to the visitors, which to me was more fun because you got to see more athletes and you got to talk to more, you got to talk to different people, but you didn't get to have a rapport with any of the local Colorado guys. You didn't get to establish, you know, Todd Helton wasn't seeing you every single day. But I can't begin to tell you. I mean, I went into every single team's locker room that they came into town over the 8 years that I did this. And I kid you not, I could write a book on the amount of pitchers that we talked to that would say, even after good outings at Coors Field, how much they hated pitching there.
Oh, I believe it.
I mean, every one of them. John Smoltz hated pitching there. Hated it. I mean, and was verbal about it. Talked about how much he hated pitching there. Because you could not get movement on anything that you threw. Even when the balls were in the humidor and they were adding a little humidity to the ball, because there's no humidity, so it's all dry air, and so the ball becomes like a cue ball and you can't spin it. So I never saw anything close to a no-hitter. And like, even if you got anything going, like, all right, he's retired the side for the fourth straight inning, it would get blown up in the fifth or get blown up in the fourth, wherever it was. Never even close. I wanted one time to just have that moment where I'm like, dang, he's retired 21 straight guys, and we're going into the eighth. This is fantastic. I'm excited. There's a buzz in the stadium. This is awesome. Never even came close. Can't remember a time I came close.
I know this, and I almost want to fill one out as well as like a baseball bucket list or a baseball bingo card.
Yeah.
Of different things you can see. And mine's very weak.
Yeah, right.
I think the only coolest thing I've ever seen live was a grand slam.
Yeah, those are pretty sweet.
It was pretty cool, but at the same time, like, God, you know, I want to see, you know, I don't think I've seen anyone rob a home run, or I'm trying to think like some of the
you
other.
You should have been at the Astros game last night. You would have saw two grand slams by the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, well, that's probably not that much fun.
I know, but still.
It kind of deflates the crowd. I want to feel the energy in a crowd.
Wow. But a no-hitter, especially when you're calling a no-hitter, if you're a broadcaster and you can't say it, and you just bring, you know, like you're going down the jinx road, it's got to be a blast to call a no-hitter.
Yes.
It's got to be a blast.
But, you know, there's an art to it because you don't want to say what's going on.
Right, exactly.
You don't want to, you're describing like what's happening, but you don't want to come out and just go, yeah, no one's gotten a hit.
No one's gotten a hit, and no runs, no hits for the fifth straight inning as we go to the sixth. Then all there's all sorts of little ways to do it.
Yeah, but then all of a sudden it's, oh, okay.
Imagine yeah.
Well, that's exactly why I told you there during that last break was, I think it was ESPN sent out a sports alert telling me that Ryu, one of my guys.
Yeah, Ryu.
Was carrying a no-hitter to the fifth inning.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, why you got to do that? No mention of Fires carrying a no-hitter. See what happens?
Exactly. It's because he plays for the A's and they think it's AAA baseball.
Yeah, probably.
Good for Mike Fires. That's right. second one in his career. That's sad that I did not know that. I mean, I usually have a pretty good memory of this stuff. I don't remember Mike Fires throwing a no-hitter. I think he did it against the Dodgers, too. His first one.
Did he?
I don't remember.
I blocked those things out.
Hey, there's 300 of these in Major League Baseball history. Am I supposed to remember every single one of them? I have no idea. So good for Mike Fiers pitching a no-hitter last night for the Oakland A's. They'll probably be the highlight of their season. Are the A's? I don't even know if the A's are playing good baseball right now. I don't even know if they're. Let me look them up real quick because they made the playoffs last year and it took me by surprise. Oh no, they're in last place. Okay, there you go.
I know it's early, but they're 5.5 games out of first place.
You know what? I'm looking at this. He's had a couple of fun things.
Mike Fiers?
Yeah, Mike Fiers in 2015 became the 73rd pitcher to record an immaculate inning.
Okay, so an immaculate inning, I would think, correct me if I'm wrong, is 3 strikeouts on 3 pitches each?
Well, 9 pitches.
What's an immaculate? 9 pitches total. Is that it?
Yep, 3 strikeouts on 9 pitches.
Which is better, 3 strikeouts on 9 pitches or 3 groundouts on 3 pitches?
See, I would think 3 groundouts, right?
Me too.
Just throw a ball and like, boom, boom, boom. Yep. Okay, we're done. We're back in.
And here's the pitch. Ground out to second, ground out to short, ground out to third. And now that's over. Move on to the... Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, but he's...
That doesn't happen very often, I would think, right?
No.
No.
But then when he was with the... that was when he was with the Brewers. He threw that immaculate inning. That same year, almost a month later, because he got traded midway through the season to the Astros, that's where he threw his no-hitter against, the Dodgers.
Okay, so he had a no-hitter with the Astros.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. See, again, I wish I knew more. This is the thing. When I read the article this morning about it, because I was trying to get some more information on the game, they immediately, the article described him as a journeyman. And I always wonder, do ball players like being called a journeyman? It means they can't find a home.
Right.
But at the same time, it's kind of cool because it means, their services have been wanted. They keep finding jobs. Good for them.
But should it be considered a journeyman? I mean, he played with the Brewers from 11 to 15.
Yeah.
And then with the Astros from 15 to 17. And then the Astros decided they weren't going to re-sign him. And so he went to the Tigers last year, just for last year. And now he's with the A's.
That's a journeyman. That's four teams in a short period of time. Yeah. That's a journeyman. That's bouncing around a little bit. I know, journeyman to me is like when you used to get the baseball cards when you're a kid and you look at the back stats, he played for like 7 teams.
Yeah.
Like when they bounce around that much, you're like, sometimes 2 in 1 year. That's a journeyman to me. That means you're like, don't unpack. You know, just keep it real. You'll be gone soon. But good for him. Good for him for a no-hitter Major League Baseball history. I'd like to see one of those. I just don't think I will. There's no baseball in Nashville. I don't get to Major League Baseball games anymore. So...
Unless you're just lucky. You know, it's one of those things, I guess you probably need to have season tickets go all the time.
Yeah, go all the time.
Bring the law of averages up.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have that chance.
When I was a youngster, my father used to take us to Fenway Park a lot. And we lived in New Hampshire. We lived about a little less than 2 hours away from Boston, from Fenway Park. But we would go to these games. And sometimes we would go like on a Wednesday night in the summer. And we didn't have school, but my dad had work the next day. So we would always leave early. We always leave like a 7th inning to beat traffic. Because as many people know, the old saying in traffic, right? You can if you leave at one point, it could take you 2 hours to get home. But if you leave 5 minutes later, it could be 3.5 hours. Right? That's like morning commute. I leave at 5:30 because if I leave at 5:40, it's going to take an extra 2 hours to get to the office. So we used to always leave early and to beat Boston traffic home. But I always thought that if we were ever in a no-hitter situation, my father wouldn't leave. We would stay to the rest of the game because he would know how important that was. So, but we didn't even watch. Nothing ever came close. Normally, we'd leave. The game would be like 6-2, and we'd boogie out of there. But no, didn't even see that. And me and my brother, we would keep the box score, and we would get like all into the game, like trying to see if we're going to see something historic. And nope, we wouldn't.
I guess I have seen one thing historic. But I didn't get to finish it because of just what you were mentioning. I've been to one game at Fenway. And the one game that I went to ended up being the longest 9-inning game in Major League Baseball history.
Oh, okay. No rainouts or anything?
No rainouts.
So how long was it?
4 hours and 45 minutes.
Wow. Close to 5 hours for a 9-inning game?
Yankees ended up beating the Red Sox 14-11. The one thing I do remember, I think the 4th inning alone was about an hour long.
That must have drove Rob Manfred crazy.
Probably.
Like, he must have been like, oh my God, I'm doing everything I can to speed up these games. It took nearly 5 hours. Holy, what is this, tennis? Oh my God.
But the problem was, we had to leave early. My wife and I had to leave early.
Yeah.
Because we had taken the tea. Right? That's what this
is. So
we had to take the tea, and they kept making these announcements like the last tea is leaving at 12 a.m. And I'm like, oh man, we are far from a hotel. I do not want to take a cab ride back. So yeah, ended up missing it.
Ah, well. All right. So we'll get into the NBA as 2 games are now 3-2. And America, here are your Denver Nuggets. You better get used to them. But They just got to get played at a time where a majority of the country can watch them. 9:45 is a very late time for me to watch a basketball game to start an NBA game. Nuggets in Portland is a very, very good series, but you wouldn't have thought about it last night as the Nuggets rolled. We'll get to that coming up next. It's Tony D, Ron Culver. It's SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, doing a repair that needs a special tool, O'Reilly Auto Parts makes it easy with their loaner tool program. Over 80 specialized loaner tools are available, so they're sure to have a tool in stock to help you get the job done. Purchase the needed parts and put down a deposit on the loaner tool. Return the tool in the original condition, receive a full refund. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. NBA playoffs last night, 2 blowout wins by the Toronto Raptors and the Denver Nuggets in their game fives. And now both of those teams are up 3-2. The Raptors, I mean, destroyed Philadelphia last night. I mean, destroyed them. Beat them by 20 points in the second quarter alone, en route to a 125-89 victory. That is a 36-point win by the Raptors, who were absolutely fantastic. I mean, all five starters in double figures. Kawhi Leonard, 21 points with 13 rebounds. His presence, his physicality in this game was unbelievable. And the Sixers, again, they're living and dying with Joel Embiid. 5 of 10 from the floor, 13 points. Now, Toronto is a great story, if you will, to look at. Because remember, the Raptors were always this team in the Eastern Conference that would play really well during the regular season, and defensively they'd be good, and they would have the top seed or number two seed, and you would always go into the postseason going, the Raptors, are they for real? Can they beat LeBron? I mean, how do the Raptors? And they would fall apart. They wouldn't make a playoffs. They wouldn't even come close. You know, they would just collapse in the postseason. So with LeBron James moving to the Western Conference, it now created this opening for teams like Toronto and Boston and Indiana and, you know, Milwaukee and all these teams, right, that had a real chance to put something together where they could be competitive. And the Raptors tried to do that with Masai Ujiri going, listen, we're going to get Kawhi Leonard. Even if we're borrowing him for a year, even if he's good as gone and heading off to the Lakers or wherever he wants to head off to after this season, our job is to convince him to stay. Our job is to convince them that Toronto is a great city. We're a good organization. We've got a credible fan base that loves the Raptors, and the Eastern Conference now is up for us to take. We can take it with the right additions. So he makes the trade with San Antonio. He picks up Kawhi Leonard. DeMar DeRozan gets shipped out. He goes off to the Spurs. They pick up Danny Green as well. This is the team Masai Ujiri was trying to create. Create a team that had a good shot of winning the East. Now, look, I'm not saying that it's do or die for the Raptors, but if you want to keep Kawhi Leonard, win a championship, right? Or at least get to the finals. If you want to even have any sort of conversation with Kawhi about staying. And I don't know what's going on in Kawhi Leonard's head. Maybe he loves Toronto. Maybe the city has, you know, warms to him and he just really likes being a Raptor. I don't know. But remember, he wasn't very enthusiastic about going there. In fact, seemed really kind of bitter about it when the trade happened. Remember his press conference? He was like, eh. But now, right now, you've got a team that is on the cusp of the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, winning in Philadelphia in Game 6 is going to be very, very difficult, right? That place is really loud, but they did it before. And again, the Sixers are as Joel Embiid goes, apparently. I mean, this is a 36-point loss. And listen, I said this before, and I want to kind of stay consistent. So I want to reiterate that sometimes you get these losses where it's 36 points or 25 points or 26 points, and what happens is teams just want to regroup. But late in a playoff series, a 36-point loss is a 36-point loss. Like a game one loss or a game two loss, sometimes the team just goes, let's get out of here. Let's regroup. But if you're losing not a must-win game five, but you want to have some sort of, position of power, 36-point loss is a 36-point loss. Jimmy Butler said we laid an egg. I mean, they did. They were terrible. But again, going back to the Raptors and the opening that this gives them, to not only go into the Eastern Conference Finals, but win the East and go play for the NBA championship. This might be the thing that could keep Kawhi Leonard in Toronto. Now, I don't know. I mean, again, money talks, and we'll see where his head really is. But success for the Raptors depended on two things. One, getting Kawhi to play the way he's playing. And two, to be honest with you, and I hate to say it any other way, LeBron James leaving the Eastern Conference and creating the... Because I think if LeBron James was still with Cleveland and still trying to bring in players and move pieces around, then we'd be talking about the Cavaliers again, with all likelihood. But this has opened up the East a lot. And I think with Toronto in the driver's seat now, I think this is becoming a very, very good story. Now, the Denver Nuggets, it's about time. I mean, I don't know when we're going to be able to, if it's not now, then when should the Denver Nuggets start getting introduced to the rest of America?
Well,
the Nuggets rolled over the Portland Trailblazers last night.
Like you said,
got a game we can watch.
Yeah, you can't have a game starting at 10:15 Central, or you know, say with the East Coast, that would be what, 10:45.
10:45. It was going on 11 o'clock when that game started in Denver.
Yeah, no one on the East Coast is watching it.
You can't stay up that late to watch this basketball game.
You have to blame on the NBA. Like, why couldn't the Sixers Raptors game start maybe an hour earlier, 2 hours earlier?
Yeah, they should have started an hour earlier.
Playoff time.
Listen, these are your games. People on the West Coast, and you know, you live there.
Yep.
You get your marquee games just early. That's just the way it is, right? You have to adjust to the fact that a game like a World Series game is gonna start at 15 minutes after 5 o'clock on a Wednesday, right? I mean, that's just the way it is.
It's just a way of life. You got used to it.
Yeah. Right? And you know, Monday Night Football is going to start when it used to be on at 8 Eastern time. It's going to start at 5. That's just the way it goes. You have to get there. If you're playing Monday Night Football in San Diego or Oakland or San Francisco, and it was, back in the day when it was an 8, I don't know, what's the time it started now? 8:30? Monday Night Football? I remember when it started at 9 when I was younger growing up on the East Coast.
I know, I never understood why 9 o'clock. I'm like, my God.
Let me tell you.
You start a football game at 9 o'clock on the East Coast.
Let me tell you real quick. I grew up in the East Coast. I grew up in New Hampshire. I watched Monday Night Football my whole life. I would watch 9 o'clock and then I'd have to go to bed. And then as I got older and I became a teenager, I would try to stay up to watch like the Steelers if they were on. But those games ended at 12:30, and I had to get up at 6 for school. So I would watch the first half and go to bed on most normal Monday Night Football nights. But I never, ever, ever thought of how late Monday Night Football was until my first Monday Night Football game I had to cover for the radio station I was working at. The Patriots were finally on Monday Night Football, and I went down there. And I remember my boss saying, yeah, you're going to get down there, so you're going to want to leave around 6:30 or so. And I remember getting to the station, and I got the company truck, and I got my equipment, and I was driving to Foxborough. And I was driving to Foxborough. I was kind of in traffic, getting ready to park, and I was like, this game starts at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in the press box going, it did hit me after all the years of watching it on TV at 9 until I was there live. This is 9 p.m., and we're not even kicked off yet. We haven't started this game. What are we doing?
And not only that,
I got out at 2 o'clock in the morning.
But not only that, but it's packed. That's what always blows my mind, is that it's not just you watching it at 9, it's one thing to watch it at home, and because as soon as the game's over, it's like, all right, I already got my comfies on, I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
But when you're at the stadium, everyone there is in the same position as you, and none of them at that moment are even thinking about, God, I'm going to be fighting traffic at midnight.
Yeah, our morning news started at 5 a.m.
So brutal.
I barely got to the station to cut up audio. I barely got there in time to cut up audio from the game. I left it a little after 2 o'clock that morning after doing all of my stuff in the locker room, getting all my sound and getting to the car and fighting some traffic back to the highway. I got back at about 4:30. I got to the station and cut up audio for the 5 o'clock news.
Yeah.
But it was one of the best nights I ever had. It was so fun.
And growing up on the West Coast, you just got used to it. You knew that when the Super Bowl was going to start, the Super Bowl was going to start at 3:30. You knew
that's exactly right.
You just knew that was going to be. And so you kind of, you plan your day around it. You have the celebrations, the fiesta time starts a little bit earlier.
Yeah, so giving the Denver Nuggets a late start time in the Mountain Time Zone, maybe accommodating that audience and the audience on the West Coast, but you just shut out a good percentage of the population And now Nikola Jokic, who's having a fantastic playoff series, is still going unwatched by a lot of Americans basketball fans, and he should be watched every night he plays. SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, the Denver Nuggets are up 3-2. And I'm telling you right now, they're going to win this series against Portland. And they're going to play for the Western Conference Championship against either the Rockets or the Warriors. The Nuggets are going to win this series. Right now, Denver is playing really good basketball. Now, it's on Portland, who's playing very good as well. But last night was another rout. There was two last night. Toronto routed Philadelphia. Denver routed Portland, 124-98. The Nuggets have, again, this was a team I warmed up to very late, always waiting to see when the other shoe was going to drop off on this team. And I was told by my friends who still are, who cover this team on a regular basis and whatnot, who told me over and over again, nope, you got to believe in them. Trust me on this. This is a really good basketball team. That Jokic is one of the most efficient big men with the basketball we've seen in a while. This guy has a delicate touch passing the ball. He is amazing in his positioning. He's amazing with where he can get rebounds, where he can put up shots. He's just a great shooter, good eye for the basket. He gets a lot of assists in the game for a big man. They said, trust me on this, the Nuggets are for real. And I said, no, you know what? This is a star-driven league. Jokic is close to being one, but he's not quite there. I'm going to take Harden. I'm going to take, you know, I'll take Damian Lillard. I'll take Curry, Thompson, and Durant. I will take the stars in this league before I take a collection of really good basketball players all playing well, right? I've seen that act before, and to be honest with you, it doesn't have much sustainability in the postseason. Usually a team like that is a 7 seed or a 6 seed. How the Denver Nuggets got a 2 seed, one of the best home court records, if not the best home court record in the Western Conference, and the fact that they do get this production every single night. It doesn't drop off. They get serious production from either Paul Millsap or Gary Harris or Jamal Murray, and especially Jokic, who can put up a triple-double for a big man, who can put up a double-double every single night, regardless. I mean, Mike Malone's done an outstanding job with this team, and they're going to win this series, and they're going to play for the Western Conference. And I still think most of Americans who are NBA fans have yet to really, really watch this team. I know it just doesn't, you just don't gravitate towards this series. There's just something about it. It does lack history. It does lack, look, the Rockets Warriors is the series we all wanted to watch because we were captivated by it last year, right? Chris Paul gets hurt and changed the series. Because Houston was on its way from dethroning the Warriors. And then Chris Paul got hurt, and we all said, man, what if Chris Paul didn't get hurt? Well, you know what will happen? How about we wait a year and see if we can get that series again? And we did. That is more sexy. I get it. And what's going on in the East, because of the wide openness of it, with Kawhi Leonard, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kyrie Irving, right, Joel Embiid, the number of other stars that are on this, it's a wide open conference, and that draws your attention too, because it's on at a time when you're not sound asleep. But when you take a Nuggets basketball team where Jokic is still emerging as a star, and he is going to be a superstar after this playoffs, regardless of what happens to them, he's going to be a superstar. But when you muddle together a team that's not very recognizable from an NBA fan perspective, and also the games are on late to a majority of the population, even of NBA fans, you're getting a Nuggets team that doesn't really attract eyeballs yet. And yet, when they become the Western Conference finalist, when they're playing Golden State or Houston, which I tell you right now is going to happen, then what happens to the attractionness of the Nuggets? Does it skyrocket? Or are we watching to see a team we still don't know much about going up against a team we know a lot about in either Houston or Golden State? I think it's the latter. Listen, not everybody is like the NBA analysts you see on TV. You watch not only every single game, but watch with a detailed eye. Your average NBA fan is still managing a career, kids, paying a mortgage, paying the car payment, trying to get a good night's sleep. I mean, very, very few people have the lifestyle where a quarter till 11 basketball game in a critical game five in the Western Conference, living in New York, Boston, Philly, Miami, anywhere on the East Coast, where that's an affordability. They can do that. What does draw an average NBA fan living in Buffalo to watch Nuggets Trailblazers at a quarter till 11? Right now, if they're from Denver, sure. If they're from Portland, absolutely. If they like those teams because of something in the childhood, possibly. But that alarm clock goes off awfully early for a majority of Americans on the East Coast, and 5 hours of sleep is not going to cut it, if that. That's a long time. That's a long, long, long night for just a game five. And so if I'm the NBA, and one of these teams is going to represent you in the West, you gotta give us a little more. You got to put this in a position for us to watch it, because this is the critical time for your playoffs. Again, Adam Silver is going to have, and is going to have an NBA team in the Western Conference Finals in the Denver Nuggets. They're going to win one of these next two games. Either they're going to win it at home, or they're going to take care of it in Portland, where they've already won before. One of these teams in the Western Conference Finals is a team not recognizable by the average NBA fan. And the other team that's going to be in the NBA Finals is very recognizable. Because either one, it's going to be a team that's won three championships in 4 years, or two, a team that almost dethroned them and a team that's familiar because of the stars that are on it. And Denver is yet to do that. Now, the thing with Jokic I understand how great of a ball player he is. And I understand his amazing efficiency. He is a real, real treat to watch. You don't see big men maneuver that well. You just don't. The ability he has with the basketball to pass and see the court is astonishing for a big man. And the amount of minutes he plays is astonishing for the big man. These guys who are big, like Jokic is, just the wear and tear gets on you. But here's the thing. If you have to keep reminding me over and over again that he's a superstar, he isn't. And that's the problem I have. Nugget fans tell us all the time, Jokic is a superstar. Jokic is a superstar. Jokic is a superstar. And while technically, because of the way he plays, he should be, he just isn't yet. Because he hasn't transferred over something larger than basketball. James Harden has. Chris Paul has. Stephen Clay have. Kevin Durant already has. Giannis has. Right? Jokic has not. He is not in your living room selling stuff, and the Nuggets are not must-see television during the regular season. When they put promos together on TNT or ESPN for an average Tuesday night in the NBA, if they put up a picture of Nikola Jokic next to Steph Curry as Denver takes on Golden State, how many Americans watching that know and recognize him immediately? He hasn't transferred over yet. But as a statistical player, he absolutely has. But we know it's more than that. This is a league that uses its stars to sell you basketball. It doesn't sell you basketball. It sells you the stars playing basketball. And that's different. That's different. The NFL can get away with selling you football being played at the highest level. Yes, it will use Tom Brady. Yes, it will use Aaron Rodgers. But the reality of it is it can sell you football. The Thursday night games, even when they're duds, still get tremendous ratings compared to NBA, NHL, and Major League Baseball games. Right? We know that. The Pro Bowl still gets tremendous ratings, even though everybody wants to admit and everybody wants to joke that they don't watch it. Well, somebody's watching it because the numbers are pretty good. Right? Major League Baseball can sell you stars, but it also sells you baseball. It sells you the pastime of baseball. Basketball sells you stars. It doesn't sell you the pick and roll. It doesn't sell you the deep three. It doesn't sell you the shot from the elbow. It doesn't sell you free throws, catch it, the magic of, you know, the charity stripe. It doesn't sell you basketball. It sells you the stars that play it. And Jokic has not transferred over to that point where Denver becomes a very interesting and fun team to watch to the guy in Buffalo, Miami, or in any part in between, right? Denver, yes, of course, it's their team. Maybe much of the Mountain Time Zone, of course. But Damian Lillard has been selling me stuff for a while. He's part of the Hoopsters, for crying out loud. Remember that old advertising campaign with Garnett and Kevin Love and Chris Paul? But Jokic has yet to do that. And I'm not saying that you got to be on national commercials. I'm just saying, you know what I'm talking about when you see the recognizable faces of the league. You know, by the way, I don't think I'd recognize James Harden if he shaved his beard. Can we all agree with that? Right? If James Harden shaved his beard, would we know what he looked like?
Not at all.
Would we recognize him immediately?
Nope.
You ever seen an athlete that had like facial hair and then shaved it off? You're like, whoa, holy mackerel. Who is this guy? I don't even want to think about James Harden without the beard.
It's not kind of the same realm, but the first time I saw Tom Selleck on Friends.
Oh, yeah.
When he had shaved his mustache.
Sure.
I mean, there was just something that was not right with the world.
I completely agree. I completely agree.
Some people just need to have facial hair all the time. James Harden, I mean, there's a meme out there where a guy has, looks, he has a beard and he's all gruff looking, and then it shows him shaving it, like the different stages. And then by the time he takes the towel off and he's done, it's a picture of a baby.
That's a good one.
And I think that's James Harden. I think if James Harden was to shave his beard, he would look like he's like 16 years old.
Oh, I think he would be. I think he would be. It was amazing when James Harden, because of the beard, he looks much older than he really is. Right? He's still a relatively young guy.
Yeah. I mean, he's still in his 20s, right?
He's still in his 20s, yeah.
I mean, late 20s,
but. Has there ever been, or at least that you heard of, any. Hey, let's get James Harden to shave his beard for charity.
No.
Anything
no.
like that? I was going to say, that's got to be sacrilege.
Yeah, you don't even joke around with that. You don't kid that. I mean, shave James Harden's head before you shave that beard.
I know. You can't shave the beard. That's his trademark. You can't do that.
And when you have a beard that long, I mean, it's taken you a long time. It's not an overnight situation. It's not like you can go and get
that's right.
beard extensions.
Yeah, I mean, I did St. Baldrick's once, and I shaved my head for charity for cancer research. And I had hair back in a couple weeks, a very short amount of time. But a beard takes forever. I did No Shave November once for a radio station promotion years ago, and I had so I grew it out to a beard. And I was like, man, this is kind of cool. I like it. So my wife was like, get rid of that. You can't wear that.
That happened to me. I did a Movember once as well, and I still rock a beard.
Do you? Good for you. I did it for a while, and I liked it for a while, but the problem was keeping up with it was hard. I did, then, I was like, I was shaving it, and then I'd shave it too short, and then I'd shave it too – I wouldn't keep it clean enough, in terms of, cleaning up the edges a bit. So eventually my wife said, it's not really for you.
Yeah, there are times where my wife will, keep looking at me sideways and then refuse to kiss me because it's got a little too bushy for her.
Yeah. So – Again, going back to the marketability, the Nuggets just aren't yet marketable, and I hope they do because they're good. They're really fun to watch. I mean, they play that kind of basketball that you secretly like, but you don't want to admit you like that team looking to pass the ball five times and rotate and, like fundamental basketball. It may be the most boring thing because it's not superstar driven, but the distribution is equal. It's just this way they play. I remember when the Nuggets lost Carmelo Anthony, they had this really – they got all these pieces from the Knicks and like Danilo Gallinari and players like that. And they had this really good team, but that they couldn't win. And this is a Nuggets team that's now – they can win. And they do have a star in Jokic. So, but it's people are still going to learn to gravitate towards them. It's SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. By the way, I've got to find in stores. I just saw a little Facebook post earlier this morning on Dr. Pepper Dark Berry. Have you heard of this?
No.
It's like a blue Dr. Pepper.
Okay.
I'm not a big Dr. Pepper drinker, but something about this is appealing. Why do they keep changing my sodas all the time?
I don't know. I mean,
how many Mountain Dews are there? Like, my kid drinks all these different Mountain Dew 100. Flavors. I'm like, why is it just the green one? Isn't that good enough? No, well, you got to have this Baja Blast. And
I'm looking forward to seeing is how long Orange Vanilla Coke stays on the shelf.
I've heard about six-pack in the fridge.
I've only heard people complain.
I know.
Is it good?
It's all right. It's all right. It's not going to be my new favorite beverage of choice, but it's all right.
Man, I thought they would have learned when remember they did like Crystal Pepsi?
Yeah, remember that?
Like Pepsi Clear or whatever.
Pepsi
it was
Clear. It was supposed to be like Sprite, but it had the cola taste.
Yeah. That was weird.
That was weird. It's crazy. Crazy. When I was in the Super Bowl, I went to the Coca-Cola Museum. That was fascinating. I do recommend it. If you have any interest in business and how things get, how things came to be, how did Coca-Cola become the big giant?
Not just the tasting room?
Yeah. Oh, the tasting room is the best. I mean, my God.
Is that at the end of the tour?
Yeah.
They always do right?
Yeah, it is at the end of the tour. It's near your exit. Now, you could go there and then go back. Like, if you don't physically exit the place, you can go back and, see other stuff. So you can go to the tasting room and then kind of go back where you came. But that's crazy. One of the things that I noticed was the rest of the world really likes sweet soda because there was all sorts of sodas that were just way sugary. Like all these different countries had these sodas that were just, oh my God, give you your teeth hurt. But it was really fun. I could have spent a lot of time in there. It's great. Dark Berry Dr. Pepper. My God. Where are we doing? All right, coming up, our favorite baseball player may have to call it quits. We'll talk about that coming up next. And also, speaking of horses, does anybody want to run the Preakness? Because apparently not. And we'll get more into the NBA and the implications of what we could be seeing in round two in the semifinals between Milwaukee and Toronto on SB Nation AM.